Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends in the public media spectrum across the region, bringing you the latest news. I'm Carl Lengel, your host. Here it is, Thursday, the 14th of May, 2026. Public health advocates are breathing a sigh of relief after more than 70 Republicans voted alongside all but six Democrats to strip legal immunities for pesticide makers from the new farm bill, which just cleared the U.S. House. Eric Galatas with Wyoming Public News Service has more.
The provision would have shielded pesticide manufacturers from health-related lawsuits. Jennifer Breon with Food and Water Watch says industrial agriculture's pesticide addiction is poisoning people in Wyoming and across the nation.
Folks certainly don't want to see huge corporations having immunity from any kind of lawsuit that might provide justice to cancer victims.
A recent study found that pesticide residue is likely behind increased rates of lung cancer in non-smokers under age 50 who ate an otherwise healthy diet rich in fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. The new farm bill comes on the heels of recent Supreme Court oral arguments in Monsanto Company versus Durnell, which is expected to determine if a company can be held liable for failing to warn consumers about cancer risks linked to the weed killer Roundup. I'm Eric Galatas.
Montana's electric utility regulators are censuring one of their own following allegations of misconduct. An independent report the Public Service Commission adopted last week sums up a year of allegations against Commissioner Brad Molnar, including accusations of hostile behavior, inappropriate comments, and retaliation. Molnar is one of five elected commissioners who set rates for electric utilities with captive customer bases like Northwestern Energy. Molnar took his seat representing South Central Montana in January 2025 and has since accrued seven different complaints from co-workers. Molnar retained a lawyer and continues to deny allegations. The PSC has a history of discord behind the scenes. A financial audit in 2021 detailed infighting and misuse of public dollars. YPR reached out to both Molnar and the PSC's executive director and did not hear back by the deadline for this coverage. Molnar successfully filed a lawsuit to participate in hearings reviewing the merger between utilities Northwestern Energy and Black Hills in person, despite previous directions to work remotely. Those hearings are ongoing. Researchers are learning more about pesticides that are leaching into Montana's waterways. They're finding that streams and rivers in urban areas might be more impacted than waters near farm fields. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
Under a bridge near downtown Whitefish, Paige Weigand is wading into the Stillwater River. She's with the Flathead Lake Biological Station and is here to collect water that will be tested for pesticides. Weigand plunges an amber glass bottle into the turquoise water.
Try to hold it up in the middle of the water column and wait till it fills.
This is the second year of water sampling. Rachel Mallison is one of the researchers analyzing the data. The 600 samples taken from Butte to the Flathead last year did contain low levels of mostly herbicides.
So we're getting detections from April all the way into November. Even though the pesticides aren't being really sprayed in November, they're still in the water.
Mallison's team has identified hotspots throughout northwest Montana. Those sites either had more frequent detections or higher concentrations.
I believe five out of six of those hotspot sites were all downstream of urban-suburban areas. Only one was downstream of and predominantly agricultural use area.
That shows pesticide runoff is coming from a variety of sources. People spraying lawns or industrial uses, not just farm fields. Mallison says until now, there's been very little data on how much pesticides are leaching into waters and where those chemicals are coming from. As an ecologist, she's mostly worried about impacts on fish, plants, and insects. Most detections were below what's considered harmful to people, but Mallison thinks Montanans should know what they're being exposed to.
Because it's really hard to know all the effects.
Mallison says the biological station will be sharing its findings with communities. Her team also plans to work with people interested in reducing their pesticide use. In Whitefish, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez A leading voice for progressive Democrats will stump for a Montana candidate next week. Sam Forstag is running in the four-way Democratic primary for the Western U.S. House seat. The smoke jumper and union leader previously touted endorsements from Ocasio-Cortez and U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders. Forstag and the congresswoman will be joined by International Union President Sarah Nelson for a rally in Missoula on May 22nd at the Wilma Theater. Billings Assistant City Administrator Kevin Iftland has been appointed interim city administrator while the city council begins a search for a permanent administrator. YPR's Kay Erickson has more.
The Billings City Council voted unanimously Monday night to appoint Iftland to the position starting May 30th, serving for up to 12 months while the city completes the recruitment and appointment process for a permanent city administrator. He will replace Chris Kukulski, who's leaving Billings after accepting an offer as the new city manager at Harbor Springs, Michigan. Iftland has been assistant city administrator since 2018. He also spent many years in law enforcement, including some 20 years with the Billings Police Department. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
A reminder, Billings Logan International Airport will be the site this week of a full-scale airplane accident drill with fire, smoke, and lots of emergency responders. The Federal Aviation Administration requires airports to conduct a full-scale exercise every 3 years to test their airport emergency plan. The drill this morning will include simulated fire and smoke coming from a Boeing 727, with emergency responders and volunteers with mock injuries in the role of victims who will be transported to area hospitals. Billings Logan International Airport will be open and operating as normal during the exercise. A federally funded program to protect big game migration corridors on private land is expanding in the region. It's already been in effect in 3 states, including Wyoming, and it's now coming to a fourth, Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Mersbach reports.
Throughout the West, a large portion of big game habitat is on private land, so federal money is funneling through states to landowners
to do habitat work on their land or to put their land into a conservation easement.
Wyoming Game and Fish Director Angie Bruce says that includes changing fences to make it easier for antelope or mule deer to go under or over, or paying landowners rent to preserve grasslands. Wyoming has had the program since 2022, thanks to millions of dollars from the U.S. Agriculture Department. Colorado and Idaho joined the following year, and now Utah.
People became very interested and have been asking, when is it our turn?
Bruce says states can measure how the program is working with GPS collars. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Mersbach.
Senate Republicans have again blocked Democratic legislation that would halt President Donald Trump's war with Iran. Yet the number of GOP senators voting against the war grew in the roll call Wednesday. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska supported the resolution to halt the war, the first time she has ever voted that way since the conflict began at the end of February. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine and Rand Paul of Kentucky also voted for the resolution. The legislation still failed to advance 49-50. But the close vote signaled how Republicans are growing increasingly uneasy with the war. Chronic wasting disease has been discovered in the National Elk Refuge in northwest Wyoming. This discovery adds urgency to a 2021 plan to re-examine the size of the 11,000-strong Jackson elk herd, the nation's largest migratory herd. Officials confirmed the infection after testing an ailing cow elk on April 15th. This is the first case of CWD in an elk on the refuge. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Wyoming Game and Fish Department plan to increase monitoring and reevaluate programs. The disease is now embedded in what Game and Fish called one of the largest and most well-known elk herds in North America. That holds significant ecological, cultural, and economic value for western Wyoming. CWD is always fatal and easily transmissible. It is prompting new actions and strategies. Some Montanans on Medicaid will soon have to prove they're working or meet a wide range of exemptions. The change comes from Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which congressional Republicans passed last summer. Montana Public Radio's Austin Amestoy spoke with healthcare reporter Aaron Bolton, who's been tracking how state health officials plan to roll out these new rules.
Let's start with the basics here. Who is subject to these new rules?
It's Montanans on Medicaid Expansion. That's a program for low-income people who make more than the federal poverty limit, but still not enough to afford their own health insurance. People on traditional Medicaid won't need to comply.
Okay, so before we get into how work requirements and exemptions could play out, when does the state plan to roll out these changes?
The state plans to implement the rules July 1st. That's 6 months ahead of the federal deadline. But we should be clear that the federal government will have to approve the state's plan before it can move forward. And that hasn't happened yet. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, in a statement, said it's broadly working with states, including Montana, that want to implement work requirements early. But it didn't comment on whether Montana's July 1st deadline is plausible.
Let's dive a little deeper into what exactly Montanans subject to the new rules will be required to do. How much will people be required to work?
At least 80 hours per month. Volunteering also counts, and you can mix both work and community service hours to meet that threshold.
Okay, and how will they prove they're working or volunteering for those hours?
State health officials say their computer systems should be able to check state income data to automatically verify whether someone is making at least $580 a month, which is the minimum amount someone could make while still meeting this new rule. But enrollees might have to submit pay stubs if the state can't verify that automatically. Seasonal workers will have to show an average income of $580 per month for at least 6 months. If you're volunteering, you'll likely have to submit signed hour logs. People applying to get on Medicaid for the first time or to get back on the program will have to prove they've met these work requirements for the previous month. When it comes time to redetermine eligibility, you'll have to show you've met the requirements the previous 3 months.
That is all quite complicated, Aaron. You mentioned exemptions earlier before, and I'm sure there is a long list, but give us a sense of what they are.
Yeah, there's a wide range, from being a caretaker for a family member to a parent of a child under 14, being pregnant, having certain medical conditions, and more. This is where it's widely expected to get complicated for the state. Some exemptions will be easier to verify than others. Figuring out whether someone is going to college or if someone is at least 65 years old should be pretty cut and dry. Other exemptions will be more complicated. That includes things like being medically frail. We don't have a list of what medical conditions will be accepted. American Indians or Alaska Natives are exempt from these rules, but we still don't know how the state will verify whether someone is Indigenous or not. The same goes for pregnant people, people in drug treatment. The state also still has to rework its computer systems to attempt to automatically verify whether someone is exempt before they request them to manually send in documentation. That means connecting those systems to databases maintained by other state and federal agencies. Heather O'Loughlin is with the Montana Budget and Policy Center. She says it's unclear how reliably the state will be able to do that.
They have stated that they will use certain data to confirm that someone is in compliance without having to submit additional paperwork, but there is not a lot of detail about what that process is going to look like.
If the state's computer can't determine eligibility, enrollees will have 30 days to prove they are meeting the requirements.
Aaron, is there anything people can do to prepare for all of these changes?
The first thing you should do is make sure your contact information with the Medicaid office is up to date, so you get notices about these new rules. You can also follow updates from the state at medicaidchanges.mt.gov. You can find a link to that along with this story at our website. Aaron Wernham with the Montana Healthcare Foundation says it's not a bad idea to start talking to your doctor about any health conditions that might prevent you from working.
We don't know exactly what form the documentation will need to take, but I think having that conversation with your provider early so that you're both thinking about and prepared to provide the documentation when it's needed is a very good idea.
It's also not a bad idea to start keeping pay stubs or volunteer hour logs handy.
So essentially, Medicaid enrollees should find ways to collect documentation that they meet the work requirements or are exempt, even though all of these rules are not quite crystal clear yet. I am curious, though, how are people on Medicaid feeling about all of this?
To put it simply, confused. The state says it's already notified everyone that we'll have to comply with these new rules. Keegan Nishan has been on Medicaid for 6 years. At a recent legislative hearing, she told lawmakers she's only heard about the rules through news reports.
That should be reason enough to slow down this process and allow for more time to ensure that all Medicaid recipients are notified of these changes. We cannot comply with changes if we're not being notified.
I talked to Caitlin Bosshart, who supervises social workers at Partnership Health Center in Missoula. She says patients are just as confused.
They are not sure what this reporting of work requirements is going to look like. Like, is it going to be a letter from their employer? Do they need to have pay stubs? This like July 1st date is also alarming people that these changes are going to happen to everyone July 1st, which is not going to be the case.
Is there any sign the state might delay that self-imposed July 1st deadline, Aaron? It's coming quickly.
Yeah, some Democratic lawmakers and people that will have to comply with the rules have asked for that. So far, state health officials say they have no plans to delay.
Well, thanks for breaking all this down for us, Aaron. I know you'll be back after we learn more about all these changes.
Yep, we'll be watching it closely. Thanks for having me.
That's The Worm for this Thursday. Catch up with us tomorrow. We'll have another episode for you early birds then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.